Next on the agenda, the speaker comes to us fairly locally. She does a great job of preaching the truth message of agriculture. Not only is she VP for Bosco Trading, she manages a long-standing relationship with both local farms and works closely with customers worldwide to supply their forage needs for their dairy and beef farms. Has been involved in statewide and local politics, an advocate for not only her family farm, but many other family farms as well, and has increasingly become a voice of the transportation industry. Please help me welcome Shelley Bosshart Davis.
All right, good morning. So yes, I do come here locally. Our press is just a couple miles outside Salem, and we're based out of Tangent. But I did, and I'm not sure if I told you or not, and I think, let me see if this works, but I could say I flew in from Arkansas yesterday, and this is what I was doing yesterday morning, so kind of wish I was still there, but love to talk transportation, so I'm very glad we're here. So we are, you might have known us from a few different names. SJB Farms is our grass seed farm. We farm about a little less than 1,000 acres in the Tangent and Albany area. Bosshart Trucking is our trucking company and also what we bale straw, the name that we bale straw under. And Presco is our pressing facility, and Bosco Trading is what we sell internationally. So all of you guys have seen the balers out in the field, you know the farming aspect of it, and so you're probably most unfamiliar with the pressing aspect of it. How many, by a show of hands, how many people have been to a straw press here in the valley somewhere? Have you seen it working? Okay. I'd say a little over half. So those that you see there, those are going to be packages of grass straw. Each one of those packages include about 24 bales. Each one of those bales will be about 50 pounds, and we package them according to what the customer needs overseas. That is a picture of our press. That's one of the, you see the straps around those bales. Each one of those bales, like I said, weighs about 50 pounds, and we throw them into the container just like that, and then we'll ship them overseas. So us, Bosco, will ship about 60 containers per week overseas through the ports of Portland, Tacoma, and Seattle. And there's a lot of different things that I could talk about, but I thought I'd go through a little bit of the history of what happened here and then move on to some of the current issues that we're seeing with the export market. A lot of that affects straw. All of that will also affect grass seed exports. When you're talking about anything exporting overseas, these are all the things that we're dealing with here in Oregon. So I say it's always something when it comes to global shipping. There's always something going on. A couple of years ago, nobody was talking about ports. Nobody was talking about transportation, and that's because it worked. And so hopefully in the future agendas, you won't have two different speakers talking about port issues because they'll work. And so we're talking about it because it's not working, something's going on, and so there's a lot of conversation about it. There's conversation in our legislatures, there's conversations in Congress, there's conversations with our governor that we'll talk about a little bit later. And so unfortunately, it's something that we're talking about a lot. So these are just a few different things that if something's going right, who knows what's going to happen in the next week or the next month or maybe the next year. Contract negotiations, that's something that we dealt with in 2014 and 15, the West Coast port crisis is what I called it. And that was a long-standing effort to finally get that resolved, and still we see some effects from that today. Container shortage, it might be a terminal, it might be one ship line, it might be a shortage throughout the entire Northwest. So that's something that we deal with. GRI, if you hear anybody talk about a GRI, those are general rate increases. And we'll talk about the Hanjin bankruptcy and the receivership that we just went through there and what that's doing to some of our container prices as we deal with exports out of Oregon. Mentioned that in Hanjin. Rail issues, that's something that's talked about in the Oregon legislature. Do we want to add more rail here in Oregon? Will that be better? Will that be worse? Are they on time? Are they dependable? Are they reliable? Will they be as productive as we need them to be? And those are things that we'll see as a common theme when I talk about anything to do with our ports. Full vessels, again, because of the Hanjin bankruptcy, and I'll speak a little bit more about that. All of a sudden, these vessels that maybe weren't full previously are now full, and what's that doing to us? Terminal slowdowns, we still see it. A lot of times we won't see it until our trucks are sitting in lines at the ports, and then all of a sudden there might be a slowdown for whatever reason. Rate variables between ship lines, that constantly changes. We work with approximately 13 different ship lines, and any given month it could be a different rate variation between them, and that's something that we deal with on a constant basis. Rolled bookings and split bookings is a big deal, especially lately, coming out of Northwest Container. And that's something that anybody who's dealing with exports right now it's more because of the Hanjin bankruptcy that I'll touch on. Vessel routes changing, everything might be great, and then all of a sudden the ship lines change some of the routing, and that's an issue with us. Trade routes I'll talk about later, and then customer service problems are becoming more common because a lot of ship lines are trying to cut costs, and one of the things that they get rid of are the customer service. And all of these things will add costs and headaches and a lot of issues. So to backtrack just a little bit, in 2012, you might have heard of Port of Portland and dealing with the plugging in and the unplugging of reefers. And so a lot of times we didn't hear anything until 2014 and 15 and why there were so many problems with the Port of Portland, but you go back to 2012 and that's when a lot of the problems happened. I think this graph shows a lot. I don't know if it's fuzzy. Is it fuzzy for you guys or can you see it? Okay. The orange line that dips down, that would be 2012. And if you see that, that's containers moved in and out of Portland, and you see that 2012, it dips down, and that's exactly when that issue was happening between the IBEW and the ILWU. So from a shipper's perspective and all the exports, whether it was straw, whether it was grass seed or any other Oregon product, those trucks were sitting there in Portland at Terminal 6, and they weren't going anywhere. And so when you look at shipping out of Portland versus shipping out of Tacoma and Seattle, Portland is going to be more expensive, but that cost is going to be saved by not having to drive up to Tacoma or Seattle. Even if those rates are the same, we can still get three or four, used to be four, now more like two or three turns in Portland. But if you're driving up to Portland and your truck's sitting there all day, all of a sudden that's not working for you anymore. And you'll also see the purple line 2015, about month two would be February. That's when Hanjin pulled out of Terminal 6 finally, and then Hapag-Lloyd followed, and then Westwood eventually broke down too, and pulled out. So you can see that graph and kind of where we've been over the last 5 years. You also see from this graph, that's the same exact time where the NLRB hearing, that's the same time as the ILWU and the IBEW. You can see the crane productivity and what happened. They'll claim that nothing happened, but obviously you can see by that crane productivity that there was a major difference once they decided to fight that issue. So what did we do? We decided that we're gonna get a few more trucks and start going to Tacoma and Seattle. Looking back, I'm really glad we made that decision because of what was to come in 2014 and 2015. So you'll see a lot, you'll remember this, I'm sure, very well. 2014 and 2015, it was the West Coast port crisis. And why does that matter so much? I think it matters greatly, and I say it again and again. It's because the West Coast is showing that we're not reliable. We're not reliable. And as things change in the future, the West Coast ports, I think what we're going to have to prove to everybody in the world is that we're reliable, that we're productive, and that we're open for business. So I see a few things that we're going to have to work on and a few things, few issues that could be resolved to make it a lot better for the future. There were a lot of articles. I don't think that's even all of them. I like that's the best one. What the heck is going on at the Port of Portland? So finally, the West Coast port crisis was agreed upon in February, and it wasn't ratified until May, but the issues continued with Port of Portland, as you well know. So that makes us just a little bit different. This is a picture of, you can see all of those ships sitting out at sea in 2015, and what happened as the labor slowed down, the ship that was on dock at the time, it should take maybe 1 to 3 days to unload that vessel, load it back up, and get it back out to sea to its next route. Well, if those 2 to 3 days extend to 6 or 7 days, the next ship coming in is sitting, then the next ship coming in is sitting, and the next one. And so that is what we saw. This is outside, I think, LA Long Beach, and they just literally sat out there sometimes for weeks, if not months. There's another showing of them sitting out there. And that's actually our truck sitting in line in the Port of Seattle, I believe, at one point. So going back to Oregon, the governor, after this, after Port of Portland was having the issues that they did, the governor put together the Trade and Logistics Initiative. The Tioga Group was charged in interviewing a lot of people. I think it says over 300 people participate in this. Many of you probably were a part of that. I know that we were. And basically, she paid them about $200,000 to come up with a lot of information that didn't do a lot of things. But I will say, if there was one positive that came out of all of that, and that is the Oregon legislature is much more versed in transportation issues that all of us see and the costs involved in that transportation. And so I would say if there's a positive that comes out of that, that's one of them. You'll notice here that hay is always grass straws looped in with hay, straw, and then seeds, and I believe that's going to encompass all of Oregon grass seed and possibly some other. But if you look at the numbers and how much was coming out of T6 and how many containers that we have coming out of Oregon, it's a large share of it. And I would even suggest, that's in 2014, and I would even suggest pre-2012, that those numbers were larger coming out of T6. It was 2012 when a lot of problems happened in Terminal 6, and many chose to go to Tacoma and Seattle. And when I talk about Northwest Container, and if people say that they're still delivering into Portland, they are. We do as well. But Northwest Container is a rail yard in Portland that we can drop off containers, pick up empties, and then Northwest Container takes care of either railing it up to Tacoma or Seattle or trucking it from there. And so we're still able to utilize those turns, but in our opinion, we can't be 100% going into Northwest Container because for us it's just not reliable enough. When you add one more person touching that container, it can split. If you have a 5-can booking, two maybe don't get on the rail, and then they have to be split to the next week. That's a lot of costs. That's a lot of headache and makes the customers very unhappy. So that would be a split. Rolled booking, it might not have made the rail at all, and the ship line rolls it to the next week, which again makes the customer unhappy, and that's the last thing that we want to do. So when we deliver to Northwest Container, it's because we can make multiple rounds per day, but on the other hand, it's going to be a little bit more unreliable and add extra time to that shipping transit time. So that would be the difference between when people say they still deliver to Portland, they're using Northwest Container, not the actual terminal where the vessel will call the Port of Portland, and that no longer happens. So is it a big deal? Yes, it's a huge deal. And the reason we keep talking about reliability, if you look at these numbers, you can see the port crisis is where that the blue line dips there at the end. If you notice the other ports is the yellow line, that would be the Gulf and the East Coast. They expanded their operations. They increased. And that was because as we become more unreliable, and they continue to be reliable, then as those trade routes change and the Panama Canal comes on, could there be a shift in the future? Could manufacturing move to the East Coast? We all know that the greatest people density is on the East Coast, not the West Coast. Well, we do have LA, but most people live on the East Coast. And so will it make a change? I don't know, but it's something that we have to look at and have to become more reliable, because if they make that change to the East Coast, will they ever come back? Once people make those kind of big changes, will they come back? And we can't move. We all know we can't move our manufacturing facilities to the East Coast. And what will happen to the containers? Are they going to have to be brought in from somewhere else? And will that add costs? And if that adds costs, will we be able to compete with the rest of the world? So these are all things that should be talked about with our local legislatures, with our U.S. Congress, and say we need to be looked at on the West Coast, and this is a big deal. This is, if you talk about straw, I wanted to throw this in and look at just the numbers. When the port crisis first started, like I said, we'll export about 60 cans per week. That first week was 60, and then as things just slowed down and slowed down and slowed down, by the end of the month, we were only shipping about 24 containers. At the worst of the port crisis for us personally, we had 155 containers sitting on dock waiting to be put onto a ship so that it could get to its destination. I talk about global shipping routes and why that matters. And if you see over in Asia, and right now a lot of manufacturing is done in China, if that moves east towards like India or somewhere in that area, could it be where they go through the Suez and over to the East Coast? And so I just wanted to show you some of the trade routes that we would be dealing with. And the biggest reason behind that is if that moves, where do our empty containers come from? And that's why everybody in this room should be concerned, because we do deal so much with exports, not with grass straw, with grass seed, and our economy is our agricultural economy in general, and what does that do to us? Kind of a summary, November 2014 to May 2015, that was when most of it happened. Our shipments were down a lot. That resulted in carryover into 2015. Then we harvested, filled up our buildings again. We still had straw left in the buildings. The biggest effect is the reliability with customers. I know I say it over and over again, but I have a colleague that lives in Hong Kong that's in the export-import business with Alfalfa Hay out of California, and he lives in Hong Kong, and he's from Oregon. His local market always carried Tillamook cheese, and when the port crisis happened, that Tillamook cheese he couldn't find any longer. It couldn't get to that supermarket, and he said it was replaced with a cheddar from France, and still to this day, that Tillamook cheese hasn't come back, and so the last thing we want to do is give our international customers a reason to go elsewhere. Will they come back to us or not? That remains to be seen. So that's the biggest impact that we see. I have a quote from Agriculture Transportation Coalition there. Basically says we can produce the best, but we have to be able to get it to market. We have to be able to compete with the rest of the world and be able to get it there within a timeline that's expected. Reliability, I wanted to talk a little bit about you can read that, the East and the Gulf Coast ports. I see a typo, dang it. That's Gulf Coast, not Gulf Coast. And then also notice the GDP there in the Southeast is expanding at twice the rate of the national economy currently. And so what that does is they have the ability to expand on their cargo. It's just giving them more reasons to move, and we just need to stop that, and we need to be aware of some of the things that's going on. I spoke to the Oregon legislature last year, actually a couple months ago, and Leah Geshwill, she was also speaking. She's the past president of Oregon Association of Nurseries, and very simple. The only thing dampening our ability to be number one in anything is the ability to get it to market. We've got to be able to get it to market. I will say there is some good news. A focus on reliability and service appears to be helping Seattle and Tacoma. A lot of their imports were being moved through the ports of Vancouver and up through Canada, and being able to divert through Canada instead of going through U.S. But Seattle and Tacoma are realizing that, and I think that they are refocusing on being reliable. Also productive, and I know this is going to make everybody mad in this room because we talk so much and we've heard so much about the ILWU, how much money they make, and all of us here will think the same things. We can probably send some of our own people and run those cranes and run those topics. I mean, come on, let's move, let's get productive, and let's get the cans on the ship. They're the highest paid longshore workers in the world, but they're also some of the least productive labor force. Regardless of what we pay them, they need to be productive. So when you're looking ahead to 2019 and the next negotiations, contract negotiations, we have an opportunity to address those things. With the newest administration change, do I think that that's a bigger possibility that it will not be drawn out like we saw in the past? I absolutely think that there's no way that that contract negotiation will be able to stall as much as it did in 2014. If the West Coast ports can become reliable and productive, regardless of what they're paid, our opportunity is pretty large. It's huge. So let's talk a little bit about the Hanjin bankruptcy. That happened the end of August, beginning of September. And just to show you what their market share was, they were third in the Trans-Pacific, and so that's a huge number to have to pick up. All of that vessel space, all of those vessel routes, that was a big number to pick up. So anybody using Hanjin now has to find a space on other vessels. And even if you only use Hanjin a little bit, you still have to, that has to go somewhere else. And so you can see where they ranked as far as the Trans-Pacific and why that's a big deal. If you look at Hanjin by the numbers here, 97 container ships, seventh as far as in the world. There's their market share. The value of goods stuck on ships everywhere is quite large. And if you look at where they were in, I don't want to, one more. Wait, let's go back one. So you can't see the outline of the world very well. Oh, you can up there. Those are where all the vessels were stuck. And if you look in Vancouver, we had 5 or 10 cans actually stuck up there. I know that I talked to some seed companies and they had some containers stuck around the world too. And to be completely honest with you, it's the middle of December now. This happened early September, and literally our cans are now on the Pacific moving towards their destination. Grass Straw should be okay. We should be fine as soon as they open that container, but there's a lot of exporters that would not be so lucky, and by the time their containers get to their destination, might not look so good. And here's where it affects you guys. Here's where it affects us a lot. What's the impact? If you look at the short-term capacity and you see where their market share was, it's going to produce a spike in the Trans-Pacific rates. The first thing that happened within a couple days of them announcing this, all of the other container lines immediately announced a GRI. According to FMC rules, the Federal Maritime Association or Commission, according to the rules, you have to give a 30-day notice. They immediately announced a GRI because they knew that their business would spike. And 30 days later, they announced another one. And 30 days later, they announced another one. So we're seeing quite the spike in those container costs as the demand gets larger and there's less vessels to move those containers from here overseas. So what's the outlook here? I threw on Hanjin on there just because you can see how much it's going to affect us. Those containers have to go somewhere else. The short term, we're dealing with splits. We're dealing with rolled bookings. Getting space on the vessels is a lot harder previously. And like I said, it's always something. There's some times of the year that I can easily book for next week or maybe 2 weeks in advance. Now I'm looking at 5 or 6 weeks in advance and trying to work with the customers in order to book that out. So that's something that we're dealing with on a short term, being able to get space on the vessels. Will the ship lines begin planning better? Part of the reason we have so many split and rolled bookings is because they're not planning very well. Previously, fall down on these vessels were maybe 40% or higher, depending on the ship line, depending on the vessel, and now they're looking at 5 to 10%. How do you plan for that? How long will that fall down be? And I will say it's a little bit different with ship lines. They don't charge if you don't turn in your bookings. Like if you book a hotel room and you don't show up, you most likely are going to get billed. With ship lines, if I book 20 containers on a vessel and I don't deliver any of them, I'm not going to be charged anything. That'll affect my relationship with that ship line, but I'm not going to be charged anything. So one of the ideas that the ship lines have come up with is they're going to start charging for that. And a lot of the shippers have revolted and said, wait a second, can I charge you for rolled bookings, for split bookings as well? And they say no. So there's that going on right now. The U.S. dollar strengthening. As of today, the yen was 114.38. To compare that to just a few months ago, I was pretty excited because it was right around 99 to 100, and that was really good for us. So that's something that we're dealing with there. And then, of course, I mentioned GRIs. That's something that we're dealing with on a monthly basis. How much is that going to be? For Grass Straw, I always say it's like Costco. It's a low-margin, high-volume product. And so every time there's a GRI, it's going to affect that low margin more than the high margin shipper. And so, for example, if we can put at least 25 ton into a container, every time that container increases by $100, that's about $4 per ton increase to us. And so as you can see, every month that goes up, if we raise our prices, a lot of times the ship lines are taking that. So it's something that we're working through, working with our customers, and continuing to try to move as much product as possible. Long-term, I actually talked about the charges on that. Are there going to be extra shipping charges? Is that going to be one example of it? Are there going to be more? Transportation, I saw this in the Journal of Commerce just last month. Is there going to be sticker shock? As the economy might be strengthening, is transportation going to cost more, whether that be rail, trucks, ships, whatever the case may be? The Trump effect. Are we going to see some relief in regulations? He's talked about a transportation package. He's mentioned ports and terminals and dredging and bridges. And what's the effect going to be for that? Is that going to be good for us? Improving those things, renegotiating trade deals. How does that affect us as ag exporters? I think I added question marks to all of these things because we just don't know yet. And then, of course, the upcoming labor contract on the West Coast. How does that affect us when we're looking a few years ahead? So all of these are question marks as far as the long term. Going back to one of my first slides and saying it's always something. So you know, you just don't know what's going to come your way. We try to be as efficient, productive, and reliable as we can be and be ready for whatever that next thing that hits us is. And I think that's all that I have for today. I'm not sure what time it is. I don't have a watch on. Do I have a couple minutes for questions? Anybody have any questions on any of that or anything that I didn't explain enough? Everybody's sick of transportation? I hear you. All right.